For January the 5th, 2024, we talk about Cookie Cutter, Cubism, Elden Ring GeoGuessr, and much more. Welcome to Level 484. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We're back in the new year. Hey, everybody.
The world has existed way longer than I thought it would.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah, but I don't know. We're just going to start out on a super bummer note. An arbitrary time has passed, milestone and all that. More importantly, though, we had some time off, and there were holidays and things like that. So who wants to get us started with a little report, a little oral presentation on how they spent their week off?
Did everyone bring their slideshows?
Oh, no. This is my worst dream about school. Oh, no.
Wait, that's your worst dream about school?
Well, you guys are all naked right now, right?
Well, the cameras are off. I think the uncertainty of that, the cameras being off brings a certain spice to proceedings.
Apparently, in my worst dream about school, everyone else is naked, not me.
Right. Either way, the core fear remains that you're the odd one out.
That would be actually kind of funny if everyone's like, dude, why are you wearing clothes? What's wrong with you?
I can't get them off.
Oh gosh, man, I am embarrassed at how many stress dreams I still have about school, how many stress dreams I still have about old jobs. I should be paid if I have stress dreams about old jobs. That should be compensated.
Severance is the worst. What is this?
Oof. Dennis, I'm gonna throw to you first because you have kids and stuff.
Yeah. Well, their big gift is that we are going on a Disney cruise in a couple weeks here. They found out about that. We managed to keep it a secret from them, despite me slipping up in the worst possible way. So we're at the dinner table. This is before Christmas. Okay. I've been doing like a 4-hour eating window for the past couple of months here.
Doing like an intermittent fasting kind of deal. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, and so I'm not doing dinner. I kind of eat something earlier in the day, and then I'm done. And so the kids were just, we were just talking about stuff, and they're like, so, Dad, are you ever going to, like, go back to a normal schedule? And I was like, I don't know. Like, on the cruise, I'll probably eat at a normal time just because it's fixed. But and then I just saw Jen staring at me wide-eyed, and I froze like a deer in headlights. I looked at Luke and Milo at the table. The one fortunate thing about nobody listens to me is it just went completely past them.
I was gonna say the fact that your loved ones ignore you has never cut in a more positive direction.
That's right. So I just and then I think I mumbled something about like, but no, I think I like this and went on, and it just like sailed right in one ear and out the other for them.
Good, so. Good. Yeah. I admire Jen's performance in that instance because she was innately aware that all she could do, like the only thing that she could do is give you a look. If she brought attention to it at all by trying to correct you or any of that, that is what would have done it. It's kind of like when a kid falls over and they don't have any reaction until the parent runs up like super scared, like, oh my God, are you okay? And then they cry. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. She was a passenger in that conversation.
Well, that's good.
And thankfully we got through it. So they were super excited. There's like a VTech Marble Work toy. So it's like the VTech, the brand, their version of Marble Works. That Jen is more excited about than the kids. The kids are pretty excited about it, but she geeks out about it. And so for Christmas, we got the last, three sets that we didn't have. We now own literally every variant of this toy.
So what is a Marble Works?
Oh man. Well, traditionally it's like the plastic pieces that you fit together with piping. These ones, are more like blocky. So it's more on a grid, instead of just,
it's like modular pieces for making a marble, like roller coaster course.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the last one
just used, like toilet paper rolls. And
that was a whole event. Was the marble sheets thing for the Talent and Gifted program. Yeah,
it's good times. The last one, one of the last ones that we picked up at Christmas though, is cool as hell. The marbles are somehow like magnetic without changing weight or anything, so it works with all the other stuff. But then it comes with a bunch of pieces where just like, whereas a normal marble will just roll past something, the magnetic marble will like whoop, you know, like 180 change direction.
Okay.
And that's amazing. They have like these arms that like grab the marble at a lower point and then swing up to a higher point and kind of shake them off.
Oh, kind of using the momentum to do like a stop. Oh, yeah. Oh, man, so cool. I love that shit.
So, you know, we got our kids this for Christmas.
Right. You got your kids this. Wink. It is a shared activity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So is this just an extension of your love of pinball?
Probably. Yeah,
you basically are describing the gimmick from the Twilight Zone table a little bit.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's, there's got to be a connection there somewhere. So that was a blast.
Mm-hmm.
So just a really fun Christmas overall, and put some fun events on our horizon. So going into 2024 with some fun new toys and some fun new vacations to look forward to.
Yeah, good to have stuff to look forward to. Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ben, you did some traveling.
Yeah, I went back to Midwest, had Christmas with my family. I think a lot of the traditions were in place. Me and my brother made dinner for everyone, so that was nice to do. And then trying to see everyone in Cincinnati and partially succeeding. So, it was a good time, but I'm happy to be home. One thing I found out is in the Cincinnati airport, they have cans of Skyline Chili and Grippos that you can purchase.
Oh, so man, I'm way more excited about the Grippos.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can get Skyline at actually any Kroger's.
Kroger's?
You can get it down here in Alabama, and I think in Texas, at least.
Mm.
I wonder what the limitations of that are. Since they own like a bunch of different grocery stores, I wonder if it has to be branded Kroger or...
For people who aren't aware, Grippos are a Cincinnati area barbecue potato chip where each chip by weight is more spicy barbecue seasoning than actual cut potato.
Yeah.
That's not an exaggeration.
Imagine a great barbecue potato chip and Grippos are that except better.
Yeah, they're almost too much to eat on their own. My favorite thing to do with them is to put them on a grilled cheese. Like do a grilled cheese with pepper jack and provolone, and with some crushed up Grippos on there. That is good eating right there.
That's like my go-to camping food.
Yeah.
See, still one of my like bucket list items is to go get the factory reject Grippos.
That are just too much, just too action-packed.
Yeah, supposedly if you go to like the factory, there's some side door that if you go in and like slip them a 20 or something, they'll get you a box of ones that are just like too much even for them.
Oh, and it's as we've established, their standards are fucking deranged. Yeah,
right,
it's exactly. Fresh off the line too. Mm.
Yep. You know, they actually sell the powder. Like, you can just buy, like, shakers of the flavoring.
Yeah. I can't get Grippos a quantity up here. I have to buy them in small bags at the Drug Mart around the corner from where I live. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just a little hit.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to see if I can order those in, because as you might imagine, those are not a thing down in Alabama.
You can do that. Like, you could definitely, like, order. I know that... with Jones chips, you were able to ship them. I'm sure that there's an outlet somewhere where you can buy like a big box.
I heard apparently Jones chips, like the Food and Drug Administration, like ruled they had to change something so they aren't as good now.
Yeah, it was a trans fat thing. So they're less like just very clearly just pressed shavings of you know, Crisco. Oh, well.
Also, this has been another of only people that grew up in our hometown have any idea what we're talking about.
Right. It's fine. People like our local flavor. We were talking about Cincinnati, too. I think everybody's guilty here.
And if you don't like Grippas, you have no business on this show.
I mean, if you don't like Grippas, you haven't tried them.
That is well said.
Did you grab anything to bring home and show to people to demonstrate? Yeah.
I had pre-packed a bag of Grippas, but then I picked up two cans of Skyline since I had them there. So
nice.
We'll use those for special occasions.
Yeah. Moxie, how about you?
So I had a fairly uneventful break. We had Orphans Christmas, so just, you know, all the people in town that, you know, didn't have something they were already planning on doing. You know, got together and you know, had a potluck brunch.
Okay. Oh yeah, so, that's good.
Yep. So I brought mimosas.
Okay.
Because, you know, the one thing that all Christmases need is booze.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a little bit more of a boozy Christmas this year, and it was good. Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah.
It was never really a part of the tradition before, so.
Well, I mean, it was never 2023 before, so.
True. The circumstances never called for it. Yeah. Hmm.
We did, have I talked about it yet? We did finally were able to do the Wicker Man burning.
No, is this your roleplay group?
No, so this is actually like the local meadery that is, I guess, also kind of de facto the local pagan group.
Okay.
Was planning on burning a Wicker Man for, I'm not pagan, so I'm not sure. I think Samhain? Halloween?
Samhain, yeah. Samhain.
Yeah. But we've been going through, like, a major drought, so there was a burn ban.
Probably unwise, yeah.
Yes. So instead, it ended up being a Wicker Man burning for Yule.
Okay.
So was a giant bear effigy. Okay. Looked a little bit like Winnie the Pooh.
Okay.
So I'm hoping that maybe by, like, burning it, we might improve conditions in China.
I mean, couldn't hurt.
Right, exactly.
Covered in chestnuts for the holidays? Or?
Yeah, well, what was the notional sacrifice? Was it a Catholic cop who was way too uptight?
So, again, I don't fully understand, because I was basically just there to hang, I'm pretty sure, like, Nicolas Cage teaches us that I was at risk of being burnt. I'm pretty sure that's how that works.
I mean, it's only if you were there looking for your daughter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And also that you go to the 2006 Wicker Man and not the 1973 one.
Okay.
Oh God, what are you even doing here?
and obviously, sorry, we should disclaim that, you know, pagan people get a lot of BS that they don't deserve. So
yeah.
But no,
especially in Alabama.
Yeah, tell me about it. But as I understand it, they had like a wooden box with that you could like write down things from the year that like you wanted to kind of let go of, or, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then the box kind of went into the bear. Mm-hmm. And so it was burnt with it. So I guess, you know, it's kind of similar to, I guess, to like New Year's resolutions what I kind of got from talking to people.
Yeah. Or just like burning wish paper, kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but that's cool. You know, it was a fun thing. You know, people had a really good time.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Awesome. Yeah, I had nothing that exciting. It was mostly kind of a bummer. It's the first year without my grandma. You know, so, and I don't say that to bring it down, but just to say, like, yeah, and you know, the first year of any of those is weird. The first time after my grandpa passed was also strange, but you know, we kept all the traditions going in both families, really, and it was nice. It was a good time. I've got stuff to look forward to. My brother got me lift passes for when the local skiing place does tubing. We're gonna go.
Oh, snow tubing. I didn't even know that was the thing they did. That's actually really cool.
Out at snow trails. So we're gonna be doing that at some point here when we get snow. And yeah, it's fine, nice. It's kind of a weird thing where like. No break ever feels long enough, but also I'm always happy to get back to recording, you know? So it's this weird tension where it's like, God, it'll be rough to kind of go back to a time when I'm going to feel guilty about not working, there's no such thing as time off, but also to be like, well, no, actually, like, I like what I do. So let's just roll with it, I guess. Yeah.
And if you're working on something, you can't be falling behind on it.
True. Yeah.
I'm not sure that's how that works.
You can't be falling behind on it more so than you than not have working. To be.
Yeah.
Don't expect my rationalizations to make sense. Rationalizations aren't rational.
We all agree not to look too closely at most of the things Dennis says. We're acting kind of like his kids. I think we should get into talking about games because I played some. And I'm sure y'all did too. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be kind of a different show. We're going to be doing the grind and the multiplayer. And then instead of an end boss, we're going to be talking about the title of the year.
Had end bosses this year. Oh, well, I will save them.
Yeah, that's that story that you posted is going to be relevant for a while, if not worse this year. We're smiling, chin up. Everything's good. Nothing is falling apart. So why don't we get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing over the last period of time or so. Who has something new?
I've got some new stuff.
Okay.
So the first thing, I guess, is kind of new, kind of not. So finally got my laptop repaired, which means I can use Game Pass again after about a month, which means I have all of the things that they've added. And one of the big ones was World War Z Aftermath.
Oh, okay. So is that like an expansion for the Left 4 Dead-alike World War Z game?
Yeah, it's kind of a weird situation in that it's a standalone game that has everything from the base game, and if you own the base game, you can buy it for like $35, so like more or less like, I don't know, half off, 40% off, something like that. So in effect, it's an expansion, but technically not. Like, I have no idea why they did it that way.
So somewhere between a full sequel and an expansion is what it sounds
exactly,
like.
Exactly. Yeah. But again, like the big changes are, I guess I should say, you know, for people who weren't here when I've spoke to it in the past or, you know, just don't remember. It's a Left 4 Dead like where, you know, set in the universe of the World War Z. I think somewhat specifically the movies, although it doesn't super fully, or the movie singular doesn't super fully, you know, follow it.
Right, right.
Although I think, I haven't seen the movie fit, but from what I've read, it, you know, goes beyond, you know, that. But, you know, definitely they does have some of the, you know, big highlights from it.
Mm-hmm.
However, what makes that interesting is that unlike most Left 4 Dead games where you're basically like following one group of people in, you know, fairly consistent settings, in this, each chapter, which is contains about three or four missions, is set in a different country with different a different team of survivors.
Okay.
And they all kind of tell a miniature story, So like, and one of them, for example, the very first one is set in New York City. And it's basically a group of people escaping from New York City to the Hudson, and then, trying to follow the Hudson up to the Arctic so that, they can get to where the zombies will just freeze.
Yeah, more torpor. Yeah.
The right. Hudson River being a beacon of hope is truly dystopian.
If that's all you have.
Yeah, that they comment on that. But it takes place, I think this is maybe in the movie, it takes place during the Battle of the Bronx, which is kind of the point in the plot where the U.S. military has decided, like, all right, zombies are a thing, and we're just going to, like, take the gloves off. Just full on, artillery and attack helicopters and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it's, one of these things where you're not directly involved. You're just, this is happening around you. So with the expansion, one of the big things they added is they've roughly doubled the number of chapters. So there's now, I know there's one set in Rome, one set in France, one in Arizona, I believe. I think Phoenix, maybe specifically. And there's one that's a sequel to in the base game. One of them is one of the scenarios is Japan. Kind of evacuating its population by just loading up people in mass on cruise ships and sailing to the Arctic. Mm-hmm. And so one of them is kind of a sequel to that, where you're actually in the Arctic trying to, get the cruise ships enough fuel and stuff.
Mm-hmm. So do the different scenarios have different mechanics to them? Do they have different special undead equivalents, if I'm talking in Left 4 Dead right. terms?
Not really, not different, special undead or, I would say strong game mechanics in terms of just, completely different things that you're doing. Mm-hmm. However, the story is very different. So kind of where, what you're actually doing is different. So for, probably one of the best examples is the, Russian campaign. A lot of it is you going through the Cold War era, like Metro 2033 or whatever style subway routes. Mm-hmm. And then also, like, the Russian government's plan for how to deal with the zombies was they basically had developed a nerve agent that works on the zombies. So there's a lot of things in that campaign where there's an area where there's active nerve agent and, you're taking constant damage. So whereas in a lot of the rest of the game, you're wanting to go slow and steady, this kind of forces you to, just go full speed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where it's more different stories and the stories influence what you do, but it's not like, here's different weapons this time around or stuff like that.
Yeah, so different scenario design. So like in Left 4 Dead 2, you have the carnival, midway
exactly.
kind of place.
Yes, exactly.
And that culminates in like trying to get through the turnstiles, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 100%. One of the two big things, I guess I should say at its base, this is just, a really good Left 4 Dead style game. Like, that's kind of the core backbone of it. Mm-hmm. But then the two things I'd say it does kind of differently than, basic Left 4 Dead is, one, there's a significant stealth component to it.
Oh.
Not so much, like, actually hiding, but so much as... pretty much the start of almost every mission and, significant portions throughout, the zombies, aren't actively, you know, don't actively know you're there, and apparently they kind of default to sort of a kind of a fugue state.
Yeah.
And so basically if you don't make noise, basically if you use suppressed weapons and, you know, stuff like that, they won't, you know, you can basically kill the zombies individually without alerting the rest of the horde.
Yeah, without starting a herd. So you can kind of shape the encounter. Yeah,
exactly. And that gets to the point in lower difficulties. That's just kind of like an interesting change of gameplay and, you know, just kind of, you know, just the smart way to play. And higher difficulties, you know, most of these Left 4 Dead games will have a thing where periodically, you know, there'll be the enemies that are placed within the level, but then periodically you'll trigger a swarm and, you know, enemies will spawn and, you know, start, you know, charging you.
Yeah.
And in the harder difficulties, as far as I can tell, virtually any unsuppressed gunfire will trigger one of those spawns. So it becomes very important.
Yeah. Does this have like an equivalent of like a director system? Is it responsive to you in a huge way?
Not that I can tell. It does have randomization. However, I haven't been able to necessarily tell where it's like, you know, with Left 4 Dead, you can definitely tell if your team's struggling, it'll start spawning more med packs and stuff like that.
So it's more subtle.
The other big thing the game does is, you know, a big part of the movie was, you know, spending 90% of their CG budget on just waves of zombies. And this game actually implements that in a big way. So when you're getting in the set pieces, you know, you'll just have literally hundreds of zombies charging at you. And, you know, if you're on like a raised, you know, raised area, they'll, you know, start kind of, you know, stacking up on top of each other in order to get to you.
It does a Days Gone.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That's both, you know, really cool, really visually impressive, and also from a gameplay standpoint, particularly with the stacking up, that then toppling those stacks becomes a very explicit, you know, strategy. So it's kind of almost the counterpoint to the stealth element. You know, a silenced pistol is a really, really effective weapon for the stealth element. But for the elements where, you know, these hordes are going to attack, you need something that can do a lot of damage and you don't necessarily care if it's loud and inaccurate.
Right. Because it's more like you're using your ammo and a weapon choice to very specifically like kick down a ladder that they're putting up to put it in like RE4 terms.
Yeah, exactly. And, they also, in a number of situations do the cinematography aspect of these hordes is often really good. So like there's one, setting where you're on kind of a, collapsed section of highway and you see the horde, charging at you from like a half mile away down the highway before they actually get to you. So, you know, it's very cool. There's another section where you're in, I don't know what it actually is. It's not literally a missile silo, but you know, it's effectively that type of architecture
and the kind of thing.
Yeah. And the, enemies are actually like falling down from the top in mass on top of you. So, you know, just in general, really, really cool game. Very highly recommend. The only criticism I would say is it has a class leveling system, which that is actually quite good and, you know, does a fair amount of ability to differentiate classes. However, if you want to actually, you know, max out your classes and want to upgrade all of the weapons, that sort of thing, that takes a lot of grinding.
Mm-hmm.
However, the thing is that only really is an issue if you really care about playing on the high difficulty modes. And right. It's kind of a thing where, like, if you're dead set on, like, I want to be playing, like, hours and hours of this game, well, then you're kind of already grinding.
Right. It's just naturally going to be, you know.
Right. But you can very much, you know, play through and experience the story and see all the theatrics and stuff like that. And I think get a very good experience from this without having to engage with that.
Yeah.
So that's World War Z. Any questions about that?
That's specifically like with the Aftermath expansion.
Yes, with the Aftermath. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And have you done multiplayer?
A little bit. It's, I can't tell, matchmaking seems, it feels like it take, I, it is often take a very long time to get match made, and, you know, kind of, almost feels like it's a game that does have many people playing.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't think that can be the case. Because it's a fairly popular game that just got released to Game Pass. So I think what it is it seems like kind of the way the community has, I don't know, adopted playing is you don't really, like, set up, you know, a game and wait for people to join. You just kind of start and then, expect that people will, you know, quick play into the game and progress.
Mm.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, so I've done some, and you know, it's very good. Like I said, the class dynamics are actually quite good. You know, there's very good tank classes and healing classes, stuff like that.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, it sounds neat. I'm kind of wondering, just to, you know, I think you're the only person that I've heard talk about it. So it doesn't seem like something that has made a splash, but I also might not be paying attention to places where people are really into it.
So I know at least the base game was very popular among streamers. I don't, you know, when I say streamers, you know what I mean. The capital S, you know, the streamer meta at some point. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Aftermath made those same sore waves. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like Game Pass is a good way to get to it because it seems like a tough thing to buy if like you already have like Left 4 Dead or Back 4 Blood. It's hard to justify getting another one, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And this is going to sound like an insult. I don't mean it that way, but I feel like there's a lot to be said for, I think the core story in this, like, I'm not saying it's earth-shattering, you know, it's definitely no Disco Elysium, but, like, you know, it's a fairly decent zombie story, so mm-hmm. I would definitely say I think this is a game that if you're into that and are looking for just some, you know, good mindless fun with, you know, kind of an interesting premise, like, even just picking it up and playing through the scenarios on easy mode, mm-hmm. I definitely think would be worth your time, which is, you know, somewhere that Game Pass really excels.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it's at least a machine to give you interesting scenarios for this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. What else you got?
So the other thing I've played, I actually just picked up today, so I haven't gotten very far into it, but it's a game called Cookie Cutter.
Cookie Cutter.
So this is a...
Not
Cookie Clicker, no. Very different game. So it's a Metroidvania that takes place in a cyberpunk dystopia where basically this millionaire, like... discovered some sort of alien secret and came back and was like, hey, good news, everyone. I've discovered the secret of the cosmos, and no one's going to have to die anymore because I've got this technology that can just transfer someone's, I guess, personality into a robot body.
So that's a promise carbon. That's never gone wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And as you might imagine, that, you know, kind of ended up with the Bioshock Rapture thing of, oh no, actually, this just means you can work for me forever.
Right, right.
So you play the role as a android that one of the scientists working for this mega corporation created in order to, you know, venture into kind of the alien dungeon to figure out, you know, the secrets for yourself so that you can, you know, then undermine the you know, evil billionaire.
Okay.
But then, you know, after she created you, your character's name is Cherry, you become, you know, lovers until the evil corporation one day kicks down your door, you know, shoots you to pieces and kidnaps your girlfriend.
Okay.
And so you are then, you know, end up getting rebuilt and are going after her, you know, to rescue her and get revenge.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, kind of, you know, your basic sci-fi, you know, cyberpunk Metroidvania, but mm-hmm. with a very, very strong kind of punk aesthetic.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, your character is this, you know, female android that has, you know, kind of the what is it, the undercut, but still with sideburns, you know, haircut.
Yeah, and, emphasis on punk, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. And just yeah. One thing I will say is the animation really supports this.
It's giving me like early Clay vibes, Kley, mm-hmm. Like Shank, or maybe yeah, like Mark yes, of the Ninja exactly. a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, very similar to that, particularly in terms of the art style, and has really great, it's kind of hard to explain, but just all of your character's body language is just very well done to where, like, you know, if you're not moving your, kind of default standing animation is just her kind of, I don't know, just kind of slumping with, you know, just horrible, you know, disrespectful to, you know, the man posture. You know, what I'm saying. Like, it's one of those things, you know, watch a video of it, because it's not something I can exactly explain in words, but really gets the idea across.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you're a equivalent of like Navi, your little like you know, guide and tutorial exposition giver,
mm-hmm.
is named Regina.
Okay.
Who is your robot vagina?
Okay. Are you sure it's pronounced Regina?
I am not sure it is pronounced that way, but that is okay. The way it's written.
Yeah, yeah. This is hitting an aesthetic like transhumanist lesbian kind of thing.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
How do you make sure you won't lose your quest giver?
Yeah.
It's also very gory.
Mm-hmm. Your special weapon appears to be a chainsaw, and a motorcycle is worked into your special attacks, it appears.
Yeah, and you literally start the game with like only one limb and your like robot guts kind of pouring out, just like dragging your way across the floor. So yeah, you know, like you said, you know, very much the kind of the punk, you know, kind of grindhouse, that sort of aesthetic. But yeah, seems really cool. I'm definitely you know, hitting a lot of things I'm into. So
Yeah. What particular, you know, from a Metroidvania standpoint, like, in terms of like combat abilities or traversal abilities or just the way that the world is put together, like, what is it kind of dangling in front of you?
Sure. So, I've not unlocked any like, additional, movement abilities, stuff like that so far. Mm-hmm. It, probably reminds me most of something like a Metroid in mm-hmm. that it's much more kind of exploring mazes of, you know, kind of tunnels and passages as opposed to like a you know, Castlevania where there's a lot more open rooms, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, and my understanding is like this is one of the like core like platformer game design decisions. Once you are falling, you cannot jump even if you haven't jumped yet.
Oh, okay. So you can only double jump on the upswing of your jump.
Well, I haven't gotten double jump, but I'm just saying, okay. Like, you can't
walk off a ledge.
Okay,
and then jump.
Yeah, that is very explicitly like a Castlevania thing.
Is that a Castlevania thing? Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah, the other, though, big thing is it feels like it's pulling in some, like, spectacle fighting or, like, stylish fighter stuff in that, you know, it has a dodge with iframes and it also has perfect parries.
Mm-hmm.
Do not believe it has an actual, like, style meter a la Devil May Cry.
Yeah.
But, you know, it seems like it's pulling in at least some of that.
Given the influences and the aesthetic that's pulling from here, I would not be surprised if they were looking at Bayonetta.
Yeah, I could see that.
Given how, and I'm using this as descriptive, not denigrative, so people are you know, not misinterpreting me, given how queer this is.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. You know, just in
definitely
terms of like
what it's going for.
Yeah, just in terms of like pulling from like the really over the top thing. Sorry, the tab started playing the sound from the game from the video, and it was very loud in my ear. Yeah, but Bayonetta seems like it would be a real close comparison mm-hmm. that they would probably go for. Yeah, nice. Yeah, was unaware of that.
Yeah, it looks fun. I'll I'll let you know once I've played more into it. But yeah, that's all I've pretty much been playing.
Cool. Is there any explanation to what cookie cutter means in the game?
Okay, so that is something I don't know because shortly after you get revived and the game actually starts, your vagina informs you that the cookie cutter system has been like fully repaired and is, you know, ready to go, and that's apparently why you can now, you know, begin your quest in earnest. Mm. I still have no idea what that means.
if I'm taking like from a cyberpunk kind of thing, like cookie cutter might be the name of the system for like transferring a unique consciousness into kind of a mass produced body, you know, kind of deal.
Yeah, you know, that very well could be.
Yeah. And then like breaking from that design to customize your character mechanically or upgrade or transcend it would seem to be in line with the vibes. So
I kind of got the impression that in this dystopia, currency is cookie cutters.
It's weird. They actually the billionaire was actually a big HGTV fan. You know, really into homemaking.
To go completely on a tangent, have you guys seen the What Is This Cookie Cutter posts?
No,
great. Someone will have a cookie cutter and just be like, I don't know what this shape is supposed to be. And people will then take the picture of it and like fill it in with their imaginings.
Oh,
okay. And it's always a dong.
They are occasionally earnest guesses and more often hilarious subversions of whatever the person was going
this
for.
This is like which Pokemon is it silhouette?
Right. That's exactly it.
Jigglypuff that reminds me of just in terms of the like, I don't know, intentional misinterpreting silhouettes or whatever. Have you seen the Among Us drawing tutorials?
Oh yeah, where it just goes like way too elaborate on these like Photoshop brush things that ultimately just resolves to making Among Us.
Oh no, other way around. It's it's the you use the shape of an Among Us with Photoshop brushes to make things. So like one of them is okay. Like if you just like tile the silhouette of the Among Us guy. And then you know, apply some filters to you know, kind of blur the lines and make it blue. It actually makes a really effective like water texture.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's just stuff. Anyways, sorry, that was a tangent on a tangent.
Yeah. My mom tried some new stuff with the cookies this year. One of them was like making like fudge. You know, either chocolate or there was like a vanilla one, but instead of just like giving you sliced up fudge, it was like giving it to you inside of a cookie cutter, to which point like that's neat and festive. What am I going to do with this cookie cutter, Mom?
Make cookies.
I suppose I'm more of a cookie bar kind of person. It's easier to do. You can just do it in a 9x13 Pyrex. That is my go-to. If you
need a square cookie cutter then.
So
good.
So funny thing is, I'm kind of, as you might imagine, you know, at the point where like I'm an adult, I don't exactly, you know, need Christmas presents. And then also I live, you know, several states away from my parents. And
it's a logistical thing. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, a lot of the, you know, the Christmas presents tend to just be random silly stuff.
Yeah.
So, One of the big traditions that I like is making Christmas cookies. So, like, actually, most of my Christmas presents this year was just I got mailed, like, wrapped, like, a thing of, you know, sprinkles and a thing of, like, frosting and, like, basically all the ingredients to make cookies.
That's just them giving you things to make stuff to send back to them. I call foul.
It's a hustle.
Oh, gosh.
Wait, or a pyramid scheme? Maybe? I don't know.
I mean, ultimately, it's just...
I mean, when you think about it, kids are kind of just a pyramid scheme.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Cool. Well, let's see here. Who else has something new?
I can talk about something that is new to me, although, okay. Cole, you've talked about it.
Okay. What was new to you? I'm curious now.
Yeah, I got Super Mario Wonder.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And this was not a my kids got and by proxy me. This was like Ernest. This was my gift.
This was Jen saying like, hey, here's this for you. Although that is a very good, I mean, akin to the marble courses, that would be a very fun one to play with the kids.
Oh, yes, because they fixed multiplayer. Thank God.
So what's funny is people were complaining about the changes to multiplayer because they liked the co-opetition thing where characters would bump into each other.
No. Yeah.
So it's, I mean, to
I feel just, like just that is it, people without kids. Like
they changed it so characters cannot like overlap with or bump each other around. And also they added in a class of characters that cannot die, but do not get power-ups.
Yes.
Yes.
I love the Polygon articles that just like there is no journalistic meaning to the story. It's just here's my crazy experience with this game. And there was one about someone who just like completely unaware rolled one of those characters.
Oh yeah, they did the thief guy or whatever, the purple bunny rabbit, because they liked the purple bunny rabbit and they found out they were not experiencing like half the game.
Yep. Yeah. Anyways, yes. I'm sorry, go on.
No, so probably the most relationship preserving change, however, is the way it deals with power-ups. Because Tales as Old as Time is, you know, somebody who's already big hits the question mark block and out pop two things, or someone who's small and needs a power up hits it and out pop the power ups. And just by proximity or momentum or whatever, you accidentally grab both.
You took my ...
Yes. So now instead of doing that, it shifts it into a little reservoir for them, or a little, you know, it's got a magazine of power-ups, if you will, and anyone can stop and hold A at any point and will use the last picked up power up.
Yeah, so take a mushroom, leave a mushroom.
Mm-hmm. So exactly. I thought that was a thing for a while now. Like, did I know several of the older games did that? Did they kind of evolve away from that for a bit?
So
three would give you a bank of power ups to use in between, and that included like special like map only power ups like the hammer. Yes. And World gave you like a one power up like reservoir that you could call on. Yeah, this is a little bit different in that anybody can call on it.
Yes. Okay, cool.
And this is, I should give context, our last side-scrolling Mario experience was New Super Mario Bros. Wii.
Which is cutthroat nonsense.
You bump into each other, you can kill each other super easy. Lives are split out individually, so you can see exactly who's bringing the team down.
I'm sorry, the last Mario game I played, I think, was the environmental one with the jetpack.
Sunshine?
Yes.
Yeah.
So these are probably all dumb questions, but is this the one with the fursuit?
No, this is not Bowser's Fury. The big like signature power up from Wonder is the elephant.
Okay.
So yes. Kind of the fursuit. Like it's still fetish baiting, but yeah.
Technically, they are furry. They are mammals.
You never forget about this fetish.
You know, everything is somebody's awakening, and I want people to understand that I am not saying it denigratingly. Go with God. If that's your special thing, good luck.
Tranquil. Yeah.
Continue. This is, it's vor baiting as well, you know.
Oh, yeah,
furry,
yeah.
Furry elephant vor, I'm sure, is out there, and probably includes Mickey Mouse now that it's the new year.
What's the vor? Is it Yoshi stuff? I mean, Yoshi's the vor stuff, but
right,
Yoshi doesn't get Yoshi stuff in this.
Oh no, that's right.
Yeah, Yoshi can't get elephantized. Yeah.
Oh, I am sorry to whoever's kink that is.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, you can play Yoshi's Island if you want the vor, and also like infantilization stuff as well.
Sure, you know, sure, sure.
God, why do I know so much about this shit? Continue.
To yank the reins back.
Elephant Mario can still ride Yoshi, though?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think Yoshi's rideable. Yoshi isn't a power-up. Yoshi's just a character that can play.
Okay, yes. Maybe this is Photoshopped. I was pulling up just to see what the internet had done with, like, Elephant Yoshi.
Save Sir Sean.
Yeah, this is gone too far. I don't want to talk about Wonder anymore.
We've kind of tacitly decided that 2024 is the year of horny across duck feet.
Good.
What with so having
we've been trying to lean out of that for so long for the level. Now we can just lean in. Yeah, go with our instincts.
No, and I mean it's kind of been the thing on the level, but like it's kind of hard to talk about Baldur's Gate 3 without getting just super horny for Karlach. God. So
sure.
You know, it's Karlach specifically, at least for the two of us. But
whatever,
Karlach's my bud.
All the memes for I know nothing of Baldur's Gate 3, but I love all the memes where it's the various villains just being like, "Please, please, just stop screwing, just for a minute."
Oh, our polycule's gonna take you down. Continue. I'm sorry.
Lord.
Yeah.
What game were we even talking about? Now Mario I just want to talk about how I stand Lazel, but okay.
Super Mario Wonder. Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, that. Who do I stand in that game?
I am on the record as being a Daisy fan. I play as Daisy.
Bowsette.
There's no Bowsette. Bowsette isn't canon in this.
I reject your canon.
So I mean other real big wins just in terms of like UI stuff is kind of the level select, so you just hit the L trigger and bring up a list of levels, and you can quickly see which ones you've collected what items for, including what you have taken the top of the flagpole on. And that's real great. You know, I don't want to slow down when I'm playing with my kids, and I'm not going to try to 100% stuff with them. We're just trying to get through. Yeah. And so for me to then go back like later in the night, I'll pull up the save and look at what I had, what I can go back and improve upon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been fun and easy to do.
That's gotta be super good for finding the stages where you didn't get the Wonder Shroom.
Yes,
because that is the new content, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And yeah, that smooths things over, especially because the map is now like pseudo free roamy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's more akin to like the Super Mario 3D World map.
Okay, so did that have sections where you could just walk around though?
It's the overworld map that they're talking about.
Yeah, it's
overworld, but it's not like moving from node to node. It's like here's a big space, and then here are like little level icons you can go to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
makes it a little easier to kind of choose your own adventure. Yeah. Although they still have node to node sections to just, I guess, really enforce rigor where they want to.
Well, it's to prove podcasts wrong.
That's right. Yeah. So yeah. What else from a UI standpoint? I think that's everything. We can talk a little bit again about the Wonder Seeds and that kind of being the central new addition.
I mean, how did the kids like the Piranha Plant musical?
Oh, like, it was great. Yeah. That was taking very well. I think the Buffalo.
Are we talking
storm.
About Little Shop of Horrors? Isn't that the Piranha Plant musical?
I mean, kind of. It's one of the early ones where you get the Wonder Seed, and then it just becomes this huge, just delightful parade of singing Piranha Plants everywhere.
Yeah, not even really challenging you anymore. It's just like, we're just going to put on a show.
Like, hey, just what about this delightful thing that we can do in this engine just to entertain you?
Yes. Yeah. The Buffalo Stampede, I think, got the bigger reaction from them.
Oh yeah.
Which is a ton of fun. But yeah, just the creativity on display and the way that they mess with the level and add new elements is really fun and really understands the assignment for what I want out of a Mario game.
Uh-huh.
So that's been delightful to interact with. The other kind of like secret MVP is all the talking flowers. So I guess you are canonically in a new kingdom. You're away from the Mushroom Kingdom and into the Flower Kingdom.
Oh, so you're a colonialist?
No, you're just passing through. You're trying to help them.
Yeah, which, why are you visiting in the first place?
So you're a colonialist?
No, it's just like you were there as part of an envoy kind of thing. When Bowser came along and like stole their main castle and all of their Wonder Seeds is what it was.
Stole became.
Okay. Yes, he took them in order to transcend.
I've got to say, I actually kind of feel bad for Bowser that what you're saying is he was like, all right, I'm never going to defeat Mario. I'm moving on.
And
goes to this new place. It's like, the fuck are you doing here?
No, he moved down to the farm leagues and Mario tanked his record so he could come down there and just ruin his day more. Yeah, this is a vendetta.
Oh, I love it. Yes. But so there are little flowers scattered throughout the levels that have no purpose that I'm aware of other than just spout voiced lines. And just make commentary on what you're doing. So I think one of the first ones you come across is the first Goomba you find is sleeping peacefully. And there's a flower nearby, you're walking up. It's like, oh, that Goomba looks so peaceful. And then you stomp it or otherwise,
the Goomba?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's like, wait a minute, what? You, what?
Like, the flower's just like, right then. Remind me not to cross you.
Like, and if it was something that interrupted, if it was something where like, oh, wait a minute, what? Like expressing disbelief at every little thing you did, it would be the most annoying thing in the world. But the fact that you're just plowing through and you're seeing them express this outrage in the margins has very good comic timing.
The peanut gallery.
Yeah.
And sometimes they just say what you're thinking. Like you run across a bunch of the music blocks and you get the, and the flowers there'd be like, love that sound.
Yeah.
It's like, right on, bro.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a game full of delight. It is way, way more accessible than the previous ones I've interacted with to play with kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited to play more of it.
Awesome. I'm happy you're enjoying it.
That's probably a hard moving target, though, because your kids are getting better and better at games as they get older.
My God.
I'm a 36-year-old man, and I'm having a really good time with it. So they're going to continue having a good time with it, probably. It's not something they're going to age out of.
No. So Milo, it was perfectly timed shortly before we got Wonder, got back into New Super Mario Bros. Wii, which, as we covered, is pretty brutal. And so he wanted me to play with him one time. And so I sat down and he hands me the controller and he goes, "All right, Dad, you're going to be the rabbit because I'm better at this than you."
Oh,
I was like, what the fuck? Like,
you have to reestablish your dominance.
I tried, but even as fucking Nabbit, I still died more than Milo did. Nabbit can only die if you fall to your death. And somehow I still died more than Milo. We do one of like the tower climbing games, and
he doesn't listen to you.
Yeah.
Can we get Milo on the show next week, please?
No,
you can. Yeah,
I think what the game really needs is a mode where only parents cannot, you know, impact and mess up the jumps of kids, but kids can mess up the jumps of parents. That way the parents have plausible deniability.
Oh,
Lord. Yeah, so we're in a phase, like, Milo's better than me at Mario. Luke's better than me at Street Fighter. It's just, I am...
Fortnite?
I'm still the hard carry in Fortnite.
Okay.
Happy to say. Which, I might as well call it Shopping Sim. The kids got so many V-Bucks for Christmas from so many people.
Wow.
And you know, I always play with them because it's an online game.
Uh-huh.
And there are solid days or stretches of time where they'll be like, "We want to play Fortnite." I'm like, "All right, boot it up." And I boot in. And then the pinball table is next to my computer. And so I'll just start playing pinball while they shop.
Uh-huh.
And then an hour later, I'm still playing pinball and they're still shopping. Just browsing. Like, they don't actually buy that much. They just skim around the store.
No.
Whatever makes you happy, man. Whatever makes you happy.
You know, as long as they know their the limitations.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's Super Mario Wonder. Played some Fortnite in the new year. Spent some V-Bucks in the new year. The other big new game that I have to talk about is Far Cry 6.
Okay.
Love to spend some time
featuring
on that.
Gustavo Fring.
Yes. No, ooh, Gustavo.
This is a fun one.
That's his name in Breaking Bad, I'm guessing.
Yes. Giancarlo Esposito.
Yes.
Yes.
I looked up this name because I wanted to say it right.
Yeah.
Which that is the first thought that I have to share is, like, I have never hated a villain more quickly or intensely than I have Anton Castilla is his character in the game. Uh-huh. Yeah. Who's like kind of the dictator of this kind of Cuba stand-in.
Yeah. That is like discovered like super hyper tech to like expand lives and or to extend lives and make crazy weapons. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's like to cure cancer and do a couple other things.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like I think it preys specifically on my parenthood as he has a 13-year-old son. That he just like every second he's on screen, he is manipulating this kid, emotionally abusing this kid in just some real shitty ways, subtle and non-subtle. And holy shit, like I've never come out of cutscenes seething the way I have, watching the intro stuff for this game. So I forget, has anyone played Far Cry 6 yet?
Yes, I
am. Moxie has, yes.
Yes. So you know the kind of stuff that he does, and man, you want to talk about good motivation? Just Far Cry has always kind of traded on its villains ever since 3, really, and this one is no different.
The only thing though is, I'm torn on. I haven't beaten the game. I'm going to be very disappointed if they take an easy way out on, like, what do you ultimately do with the kid?
You know they're gonna.
Yeah, because, like,
they back away from every single,
right.
Like,
yeah,
interesting
choice
you could make.
If we're talking real life, like, you know, like, how do you, you know, stabilize a country? Like, the kid has to die.
Yeah.
Like, straight up, you don't leave heirs. Which is why
we'll see. They do a lot of stuff early on to kind of paint that this kid actively wants away from his father's lifestyle.
You know what's funny? I'm sorry, just to take it back to the Gus Fring kind of thing. The villain in Far Cry 3 also played by a Better Call Saul actor.
What?
Yeah, played by Michael Mando, who played Nacho, who's a protagonist in Better Call Saul. But yeah, so like, watch out for Far Cry 7 starring Rhea Seahorn.
Far Cry and Better Call Saul, same universe confirmed.
I mean, that would not surprise me, actually. Yeah. Have you gotten to the point where... Who is the woman that is the head of the resistance? I completely forget her name.
Yeah, Clara.
Have you gotten to the point where you guys talk about like what she's going to do after the revolution?
It depends. Is that the boat ride away from the opening island? That's as far as I've gotten.
I completely forget. I just remember like one of my favorite things is. One of the few points where, like, Far Cry actually makes a decent point is, like, at one point you ask her this, and she's like, what are you talking about? Like, that's not how revolutions work. You don't overthrow a dictator and become a democracy. You overthrow a dictator and hopefully become a slightly better military junta. Like, there's no point in my life where I am not fighting.
Right. Yeah, that is the that's the boat ride away from the opening island, and you're kind of finally coming around and be like, all right, I think I'm into this, and so you make some crack like, oh, so you know, once Anton's dead, you thinking you're gonna be President Clara, and she's like, no, it's just gonna be fighting and struggle until I die. That's how this is gonna work. But I'm still, we can't do nothing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was. There's a lot of good moments so far in the game, and I can appreciate that. The one character that just feels out of place, maybe he's the comic relief character, is the like, you know, hero revolutionary. He eats countries or topples countries for breakfast. What's his name? I'm completely blanking on it.
I know the guy with Guapo.
Yes, so he's got a pet alligator. Which tells you exactly how serious this character is.
Right, right.
And he's supposedly this like storied revolutionary who's fomented revolutions in all these different countries and is also, you know, a drunkard and just kind of over it, et cetera. And he is in your ear as much as Clara or any of the other characters at this point. Probably because he's meant as the comic relief and the over the top, like, fuck yeah, chaos character of Far Cry didn't resonate as much with him, but overall the character work is really well done, and the writing is excellent. You wind up going on a mission with the boyfriend of your best friend who was killed, and you never really met this boyfriend before. And you have this moment where you're about to go on a raid, and he's like, you know, me and your friend used to sing a song before we went in on something like this. And you just spend a couple of moments listening to him singing this song kind of under his breath, cause you're in hiding, but it's like a really touching moment, before you go in with a flamethrower. So yeah, that's Far Cry for you.
What's the main gameplay like? Is it just a stereotypical Far Cry game? Or?
Yeah. Classic Far Cry leans very much into, here's an objective. You can sneak your way into this, or you can rampage your way into this from pretty much any angle, and make stuff happen. And the number of objectives where a little careful stealth has let me just like, bam, got the thing, ran away, and we're done. And the game's like, yep, you can totally do that. Like, you did not engage with anyone. There were these trenches and this big gun and the searchlight, and you just went to the other side, and we are totally cool with that. Like, you know, that takes some balls as a game. To be like, we built this entire fort, but if you want to sneak up the hillside next to it and place one, you know, sniper shot on the right person, that can be the mission.
I would hope
that's
so.
That's really cool.
Like in a post Metal Gear 5 world?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So have you messed around with the resolver weapons much?
Just enough to put like silencers on stuff. So the other big emphasis on this that maybe distinguishes it from other Far Cry games And they drill this into you over and over and over again in the early game, is like using the right tool for the right job really, really matters, to the extent that, you know, it matters if you are shooting at someone without body armor or with body armor or what have you. An example of this is I was clearing out an area, and I actually did a clean sweep of this one, killed everyone in the fort, and then peeked over to the front. I had snuck in from an underwater passage. At the front of the fort, there's this like heavily armored machine gunner guy. And I was like, all right, he's the only one left in the fort. And I've got the drop on him like from, I don't know, 30 yards away, 20 yards away, with a sniper rifle. I don't have, anti-armor rounds or armor piercing rounds on my sniper rifle, but like I'm right behind him and it's a sniper rifle. Like I'll just take him out, fire at him, and it just ba-tings off his helmet. And he turns around and starts gunning at me. And so having the right tool for the right job really, really is important. And swapping out ammo on the fly, is kind of built into the weapon wheel. And then also customizing your guns with kind of, how would you describe the resolver kind of system? Like
the like super weapons?
Oh no, that's the Supremo.
Oh, is that the Supremo?
Yeah. That's like the rocket launcher on your back.
Right.
Resolver is like, you know, using a milk jug as a silencer.
Oh, that yeah, kind of that's right. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Which that's cool. It's an interesting thing where like when you put the silencer on, if it's a resolver silencer, and even some of the actual silencers I've found, they heat up as you fire. And
oh, at a certain point. Yeah, that's yeah, a really good mechanic.
It is cool. Yeah. So if it gets too hot, it stops silencing. And your shots are loud, and that's yeah, that really plays in to, you know, you miss your first shot, you want to clip 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 away at him to make up for your mistake, but that clip 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 turns into a bang 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 real quick, and then everyone's on you. Yeah, so you know, the importance of using the right ammo, customizing your weapons. And then even like for certain missions, like wearing the right gear. So like, hey, you're going to go into this place with a flamethrower because you need to light up these fields. You need to wear flame retardant stuff, et cetera. Yeah. That's all heavily emphasized, which I think I've only dabbled in Far Cry's for the times before. So I don't know if that is part and parcel or if that is truly new, but it felt new to me.
So this is the first one where they have had like armor type equipment other than guns. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that part is definitely new.
Very cool.
The other big thing is your animal companions are much more over the top this time around.
Yeah, I've only seen the gator so far.
Yeah, you eventually get a dachshund that is missing its two real legs, so it has your like little like wheelchair thingy.
Aww.
You eventually get a magical spirit cat. Like there is some weird stuff in this game.
Holy crap. Yeah. It has to be better than my human companion because you know, on the missions where I've had a human companion, the AI has been a little bit annoying.
Was that El Bicho?
No. This was the friend's boyfriend person.
Oh, okay.
Same mission. I sniped a guard in a guard tower and climbed up into the guard tower to have a vantage point, scouted everything out, and then turned around to leave. And my partner had climbed up and was standing at the top of the stairs or of the ladder and would not move to let me past. And so I wound up having to just shoot them. So I could use the ladder. And then they're up there like begging to be revived, which a cool thing I did get to see is if they are downed in the guard tower and you are on the ladder, you know, they'll kind of like scooch over to the edge and reach down towards you.
Oh, that's nice.
Which is just like, that's, I don't know how many times that animation is going to come up, but it's in there. And that's cool. So yeah, that's I like my animal companions better than my human companions so far.
Man, nothing will be worse than freaking. Did you ever play Far Cry 2?
Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, freaking having to like euthanize your companions.
That was specifically a beat in the middle of the game. That was kind of like the fulcrum.
They only got in trouble because you got hurt.
Yeah. Yep. Oh. But yeah, loving Far Cry 6 so far.
Yeah, nice. it's really solid.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
No, that's me.
All right. Ben, how about you?
I only got a few little things since I've been out of town for the most part. I continued playing Resident Evil 4 VR. I got through the Lagos monster. Boy, is that nausea-inducing.
a lot of being pulled around without you directing the motion. Yeah.
Yep. They kind of acknowledge it, though. At the beginning of it, they give you a pop-up, and they're like, here's the camera controls. Go to the options menu. Like, this part will make you nauseous. So I guess that's a fine solution, I guess. Yeah. But it was fun, like, hucking the spears and stuff like that. And
oh, do you have to do the motion with that?
Yeah, it's like you grip to pick it up, and then they have like a bespoke control for it where it's like you press the trigger to see the arc of it, and then you let it go to throw it.
Gotcha.
Which since they do it there, it's like, man, I wish they did that with the flashbangs and grenades that I'm throwing as well. Because those follow like how hard or soft you throw them, and it is wildly unpredictable.
Yeah.
But it's still fun. But yeah, that game still seems to be a pretty cool experience. Mm-hmm. It hasn't gotten too scary yet, but it's still daylight.
Right.
Yeah, I imagine there will be a point where I cease to want to play it anymore because it's too spooky.
Now you get in the castle. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing I've been playing, and this is like weird, these are faux games, but I played this over Christmas break with some friends. It's Discord Activities. I don't know if you guys have ran into this or not. It's like, yeah.
You remember back in like the Yahoo chat days where you could just play pool with people, but they ultimately just wanted to have sex chat? Mm-hmm. it's kind of like the Yahoo like mini games that you would play with people, pool and like solitaire and poker and stuff. Well, that's solitaire. Yeah. That doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
No sex chat, hopefully. I didn't experience any, but...
I'm not going to judge your server. That's whatever.
All right, fair. But I don't know if you need a boosted server for this or you can do it on any server or not, but essentially you can start an activity and it's essentially like a list of like dozens of mini games that are built in, and it's seemingly free. Like there may be certain ones might have in-game purchases or something like that. But to give you an example of some of them, they have a game called Colonists, which is just Settlers of Catan, and they do not hide it at all. Like, all the cards are called the same things, like Monopoly, Euro Plenty, that sort of thing. They have a game called Crunker Strike, which is supposed to be some weird Counter-Strike game,
is
unplayable on a phone, which is where I was trying to play it on.
I still cannot get the people that play like Fortnite on a phone and stuff.
They have to be either little kids or playing it with a backbone.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
The last one I tried that I actually do want to mention that I thought was pretty cool is they have a game called Bobble League, which is a equivalent of like Rocket League. And it's, I don't know, it's probably been done before in some sort of like mini game in a Nintendo game. But essentially what it is there's 4-on-4, kind of like what Rocket League is. There's a soccer ball. But the way it works is you have 5 seconds to pick what trajectory your character is going in, and then they all go at the same time. And so the ring, and so if you score a goal, you score a goal. But you have like so many turns to do this to try and score a goal. And so you can try and set up plays with your partners, be like, here, I'm going to go this direction. Can you go this direction? And you can see where your partners are going to move before it's locked in. So that's like kind of fun gameplay. And then in addition to that, they have like these power-ups that are dropped in random places in the field. So you kind of can go for that instead of going for the soccer ball. Because that'll give you like a boosted like sort of round later. It can do things like you can put a gate anywhere on the field so you can just like block a shot on goal that they might have. Or
this
you
sounds
can,
like extremely my jam.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. So I don't want to harp too much on like the games because they're all kind of like low effort, I guess. But the experience is really cool, and I thought that was something I hadn't really done before, where you can just play in Discord, like on a voice channel, without having to launch anything, without having to worry that everybody has the game or not, that sort of thing.
There's some cool stuff in here. Like in addition to what you talked about, like there's a little mini golf game you can play. on this, and they've got Gartic phone built in, which is like
playing phone.
Gartic phone. It's like a browser-based drawing game, but like it is
telephone Pictionary.
Yeah, telephone Pictionary would be the way to say it. Just like it gives you a prompt, you draw it. Somebody guesses what the prompt was. Then somebody else draws the other person's guess, and then you see like the way that it morphed across different people's interpretations. It's really fun. We did it on a Duckstream at one point a few years ago.
That sounds a lot like it would be a Jackbox game.
Yeah. Oh, and it's good. Like, to have it built in is nice. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, anyway, this is a thing. I thought it was cool. So, yeah, people know now.
That does sound cool.
Yeah. Nice. Was that all you had?
That's all I got. It was a light winter break.
Yeah. I don't have very much. The big thing that I did over break was I tried to make progress in the Final Fantasy VII Remake. Because part two of that is coming out here in February, and I had only gone about like 8 or 10 hours into it before, and I started over again, and I got about like 20 hours in. The remake that came out in 2020 was just the Midgar section of the game. So like I've gotten up to and like well into the point where you just have Aerith with you, where you've met her and you've started doing like bodyguarding stuff, like getting her across some of the sectors. I'm like right before when you do the wall market stuff, where you have to like get the items so you can cross dress to get into the crime boss's lair to rescue Tifa. Yeah. And it's good. Like this is a good game. I've talked about this before, and how like satisfying the combat is, kind of taking the Final Fantasy 13 semi character action approach and really leaning on the stagger meter kind of basically you're dealing two different kinds of damage with any given technique that you are doing, either direct damage or building stagger so you can disable an enemy for a time and work on somebody else or deal extended damage to them. Going further into the remake, getting into different boss encounters where they feel appreciably different. In fact, like more appreciably different from each other than if it was just a turn-based, like, oh, this guy's weak to ice, so use ice spells instead of fire spells, working in like, you know, the differences between dodging and blocking, is a real good way to put that, testing reflexes, but also kind of like testing your strategy and knowing when to like bounce around between different characters, and building them to have different materia sets. Like it's an interesting kind of design space for them to play in. Mm-hmm. I was worried a little bit about how many legs it would have, but like they've got cool ideas with it. Right. And it helps. I mean,
presumably it has, two legs, unless you're playing as, was it Red 6 or whatever?
Red 13, yes.
Yeah.
I've not gotten Red 13 yet, no. It's really good. Nobody needs me to tell you this. Part of the reason why I jumped into it was not just because, the sequel's coming out, although I would like to do that because like that gets into the parts of the game that I think are more interesting than the Midgar section, but also because it's Christmas time. I wanted to play something nostalgic, right? Hmm. I wanted to indulge in that, and that kind of gave it to me. So I forget who here has played Final Fantasy VII. Am I the only one? I know Moxie, you have the PC version with upside down cutscenes. Yeah,
I did not get very far. I got to the top of the Shinra Tower, so like not even to the world map.
Uh huh. Yeah. Anybody else? Am I saying nonsense words that don't mean anything to Ben or Dennis?
I've played neither original nor remake, but I am interested in the remakes.
Right.
So my only question about Final Fantasy VII is why are people so obsessed with what's his name? The emo dude with the katana?
Oh, Sephiroth?
Yeah.
Oh no, he's been a thing since the original. Just everybody loves Sephiroth because they think he's a really good villain. He's kind of a red herring, overall, but his aesthetic is strong, so people kinda go for him. Sephiroth was a lot of people's like first exposure to the idea of like the Bishonen, you know, like the super feminine anime guy, you know. So I think that has, you know, triggers a lot of nostalgia for people.
Final Fantasy VII is secretly the game that has opened so many people's eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got that. You've got the cross-dressing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you know, you had to be there. Right. Yeah. So Sephiroth is, you know, everybody. Yeah, he's no Kafka, but what have you. Yeah. Any other questions about Final Fantasy VII Remake? I mean, it's good. Like, it's going to be much more relevant as the sequel comes out. But
how far into it are you with the 20 hours that you put into it?
About, like, halfway through. There's, like, 18 chapters. I'm at, like, chapter 9.
Okay.
Yeah, that is a thing. Like, I'm doing side quests and stuff. This does feel a little padded. If you're doing like the content that is available to you, the counterpoint to that is the side content does show you a little bit more about like what life in Midgar is like. You know, so like it's a much more zoomed in game by necessity because, you know, it's turning the first like 6 hours of Final Fantasy VII into a, you know, 30-hour game. But, like, you're getting a good sense for this city, so there's a little bit of that. It feels a little bit more like a Yakuza game than anything, actually, with its side quest structure. Okay. Yeah, yeah, but I'm about, like, halfway through. Yeah. Yep. So there's that. The other nostalgic thing that I've done is go back and play more Rock Band 4, which is nothing new, but I have pulled out the microphone and done the singing. The only reason I bring this up is because I did not know that Rock Band 4 added freestyle vocals to it. It's only certain tracks, but this is really interesting. It will let you sing any melody as long as it's in the key. Which means that you can improvise, and it actually shows you, so you know the Rock Band like melody, like it shows you the like the line like horizontally, like okay, do you go higher or lower. It actually like separates that line into like it gives you like a staff of notes that are within the key and what is not, and it gives you an instant feedback about whether it's in there, and you get extra points if you sing something that is not the melody but is still in the key.
Nice.
Right. Yeah. So that is an interesting challenge to give it a shot. Obviously, you can only do it really on songs that you know pretty well. And also if you have a sense for not only what note is in key, but what note it goes along with the chords of the particular bar that you're in, because the array of valid notes changes depending on what the backing is playing.
Are there any songs where there's a key change?
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's songs where there's a key changes, just like there's songs where there's like time signature changes and stuff.
Okay.
So. Yeah. Yep. So it's interesting. I, you know, have not leaned very hard on Rock Band vocals, but I just got, you know, inspired, read High one night and thought like, oh, this would be fun. Let's see. Yeah, that'll be. And actually like, oh, Rock Band 4 had something interesting and neat to it.
I really want Scatman Cole to be a thing.
Scatman Cole, no.
Oh yeah, that should be a stream.
No, there's no. I don't think there's any Scatman songs in Rock Band. Also, Rock Band would be hard to stream because of copyright stuff.
Yeah. Copyright ruins another.
It does. Yeah. Other minor thing is I played a VR game that is very simple, but it's also very good. It's called Cubism. If you want to do a search for this, it's a very simple puzzle game where you are given like a 3D outline of a shape, and then you are given what amounts to like 3D Tetris shapes, and you have to figure out how they snap together to fit the outline that it gives you. So like, you know, imagine it gives you like a cube with the center of it hollowed out. You have to figure out how to combine the pieces that it gives you to match that exact shape.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Super chill. It ends up being a little bit frustrating because everything you try up until you succeed does feel like you are failing.
So wait, this is not the one where you're like flying forwards through space and you have to get your shape correct.
No,
for the wall
you're
out.
Thinking of Super Hypercube, which I've spoken right. about before. Yes. Okay. This is much more chill. You take it at your own pace. If there's a timed mode, I am not aware of it and I'm not interested in it. but it's just assembling a 3D puzzle out of predefined shapes to match an outline is what it is.
I've seen this game idea in a couple of places. Like this is like Tangrams from where we're kids, kind of
a little bit more defined. Yeah. Just in terms of like snapping, like the thing that is frustrating about Tangram puzzles in, especially in video game form, is that everything is real loose. So it is unclear when something is in like a valid position. Here, things just kind of snap in and let you know if there's any overlap.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I saw another puzzle like this, like it was like a German puzzle where it's every five dot shape, kind of instead of Tetris, like the five shapes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you can make like puzzles that this looks like. So it seems interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like this is a trifle. Like it is like I think I got it on sale for like $6 on Quest, and it's available for everything. Like it's even on Steam if you have a way to tunnel those games to whatever headset you have. It's just like something neat where you probably could do this if you were, you know, rotating the space on a 2D screen. The fact that you can just kind of like peek your head around it and look up and down while you're also rotating it gives you a little bit more spatial information and makes it more approachable. Yeah. Cubism.
Very cool.
Yeah. Final thing. This was going to be my, end boss, but we decided to change that around because of the toady, but this is a game. So I can say this. Did you know that somebody made GeoGuessr, but for Elden Ring?
Wow.
Oh, wow.
This is actually, it's a super neat site. So somebody decided to do this. It's Patreon supported. I recommend going and giving them money because it's real neat. It's called lostgamer.io is what it is. And you're familiar, if you're not familiar with the GeoGuessr concept, GeoGuessr, it's a Google Maps game where it will show you like a street view of a place. And then you have to guess based on the street view where on the world map you are. And then you are scored based on how quickly you did it and how close you are, how close your guess was to where the actual like street view photo was taken. Right.
That's I know that yep. the Nashville Parthenon is like famous for that's the like rite of passage is you get a picture of the Parthenon and it's actually in Nashville.
Tricked you. You're off by 6,000 miles, you dick. So they have several in-game maps where they've done this. They've got it for Red Dead Redemption 2. They've got a new one for Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. Ben, you might be interested in that. There's one for GTA 5. The one that I'm interested in and where this kind of got my attention was Elden Ring, where it gives you a 360 view of a location in Elden Ring, and you have to guess by dropping a pin on the map where you are at. I'm pretty good at this, while also acknowledging that it's not super impressive, primarily because you can always, if you have rotation turned on and you can look around, you can pretty much always triangulate by the Erd tree and also by the minor Erd trees. But there are some,
you can look around.
You have the option to.
I've also done pretty well just with the not being able to look around, mostly based on color palette, right? Most of the time, just by like fucking around with this, I've been able to get within at least 500 in-game meters of where you're at, and that is like less than a minute's run. From where it goes.
And do you tag on the map to do your guess or?
Yeah. So they have like they've kind of made their own little like Google map out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the like the 360 view, and then down in the corner there is the overhead map where you place your pin and then submit your guess. Yeah. I'm thinking of streaming this. I think that might be fun.
I would love to see a version where, I guess, I don't know, maybe this wouldn't add anything, but like have it be where wherever you're, you know, positioned or whatever is always the, like, the most recent place someone died in the game or something.
I mean, it would all be at the bottom of the Halleck tree. It would all be with Millennia. Yeah. You know? But yeah, this is just me drawing people's attention to this. It's a really cool project. I want to see them do. I want to see them do an EverQuest version. There's literally zero demand for that. Nobody wants that but me. So maybe that's a Patreon tier. I don't know, but
the Cole becomes fuck you rich tier.
Yes. Cole starts bossing people around here. Yeah. But that's lostgamer.io. It's just a web app. I mean, I imagine you can play it mobile. You can play it however you would like. And the Elden Ring mode is real fun just to fuck around with. I've lost a good portion of today to it.
Do you know, can you create lobbies in this? Because it looks like you can match up at least with random people.
Yeah, there's a multiplayer version. I haven't fucked around with that. I don't know if there's a way to do like a code or not.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that'd be sick to do for stream too.
That would, yeah, do a competitive like with a particular person. It's a real cool project. It is a fantastic idea, and I think it takes advantage of something that is, you know, special about games, which is sacred spaces. You know, just in terms of like, well, yeah, like obviously I'm gonna know where that is because this important thing happened to me there. You know, like so many people have played Skyrim. Here is Skyrim GeoGuessr. Yeah.
That would be hard because Skyrim only has nondescript caves and
I would want to try this with Grand Theft Auto 3. Much.
Oh yeah, try. I mean, I imagine San Andreas would be more of a thing for you, Ben. Not to be prescriptive, but I mean, you 100% of that, right?
That's true.
Yeah, that's true. That's what I got.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, this one's nice and straightforward. It's Goaty time. So the award shows are in. We've seen what the professionals have to say. We want to hear what you have to say about what the Goaty was for you in 2023. And this doesn't have to be one of the officially recognized games. It doesn't even have to have come out last year. It just has to have been the game that was most for you in 2023.
Yeah. Zach says, Warframe had some huge updates this year and has dominated all my playtime for the last 4 months, so I'm going to go with it over the hordes of people who are going to say Baldur's Gate 3. And Bree agrees, saying it's been their most played game this year, with new updates being excellent.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna say, spoiler alert for the rest of the thread.
Yeah.
With Baldur's Gate 3. Yeah. I mean, I very specifically, when a game gets its own show on the network, I can't make that my game of the year. Just like 2022, if I said Elden Ring, like, okay, and what else is new? Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Patrick say?
Patrick says, it's a close competition for me between Baldur's Gate 3 and Alan Wake 2, but Alan Wake 2 just barely wins.
Cool.
Ooh.
Yeah. Moxie, what's Michael say?
Michael says, easily BG3. It's allowed my friend and I to keep in touch after we moved to Alaska. We set up standing sessions on weekends to accommodate the four-hour difference.
Oh, nice. God, I love it when... Yeah, that's great.
I have the urge to, every time BG3 appears in this, to just give it a different acronym, like, this is BioGiraffe 3.
I mean, every giraffe that's not a Mecco giraffe is a BioGiraffe. Yeah.
Yes, and this is the third one.
That's a lot of giraffe mechs.
Dennis, what does Callum say?
Callum says, probably Horizon Forbidden West. Only played in 2023, haven't played any of the big 2023 releases. It improved on the first game's gameplay in every way.
I've heard zero people say anything about Horizon Forbidden West. It's good to hear it's good.
It is. Yeah, I think I heard more about the VR version than I did about Forbidden West.
Yeah, that's thanks to Ben. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Peter says, Hogwarts Legacy has the most amount of dedicated playtime for me in 2023. However, if I had to say what game I did enjoy playing the most, it hands down was the port of Persona 3 Portable, which made its way to Switch this year. My reason? I have never made it to the third boss in Persona 3 Portable, but this time I actually made an effort and committed to playing P3P to resolution.
Godspeed.
Yeah, good luck. I'm waiting for the remake, which means that you should have too. So boy, aren't you a clown? No, that's not what I mean.
That game is remade and remade. Like, that series right. Is just uniquely suited to being remade.
But not the first two. They've never retouched the first two again, which is weird.
Huh.
Yeah. Ben, what does Scott Michael say?
Scott Michael says, I truly believe the team at Larian deserve all the praise they received for creating a game that almost feels like it has infinite possibilities. And the work they put into the, one of their patches alone is more effort than some studios seem to put in creating entire games. So with that being said, my game of the year had to be Alan Wake 2. the one with the not-so-goodest boy named Scratch. Each time I played through, I caught more references to the Remedyverse that I missed previously, and as much as I wanted that closure at the end of the final draft, I was even more excited by the questions they left unanswered. I'd be ashamed to admit how much time I spent thinking about all the possibilities for where Remedy could go from here. Considering how insane and unpredictable the game and the story felt at times, I can't believe this came from some of the same people who gave us the original Alan Wake.
It is more adventurous. It is further reaching than the original Alan Wake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Moxie, what's Noah say?
Noah says, Octopath Traveler 2. It is a beautiful game that improves on the original in every single way. Great characters, story, mechanics, an RPG that I think too many people are sleeping on and took the top spot for me in a competitive year.
Yeah, I wanted to put time into that. Based on what people were saying about it, it's going to have to be for a later time. But I believe when people say it's better.
It's just an embarrassment of riches here for us.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just deeply disappointed that none of the characters are octopuses. Octopodes.
It's low-hanging fruit. Come on. Mm-hmm. Dennis, what's Ollie say?
Well, first off, I submit that some of them are, and you just haven't noticed, a la Octodad.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Extremely good at camouflage.
Ollie says, if it's games from 2023, I think I had the most fun with Dave the Diver. I totally get why others might not like it, but it was just on my wavelength back in July when I played it. If it's any game that you played for the first time this year, I had an absolute blast playing Modern Warfare 2, the 2022 version. I'm not sure why, but myself and a couple of friends, really not FPS guys, decided to play and all really enjoyed the campaign and even some of the Warzone stuff.
Sorry to have made you read that one.
Hey, DMZ is where it's at before they ruined it. So
DMZ for the course of like 4 months is where it's at.
Yeah. DMZ before you got to it.
Ben says, for me, it was Pentiment. I could tell a lot of love and care went into giving such a detailed look at a period of history I previously knew nothing about. As someone with my own experiences with religious trauma, Andreas's journey and choices strongly resonated with me. I thought I was in for a fun murder mystery, but as I played, I became more and more invested as I began to see the mystery as little more than an interesting set dressing over the more compelling personal arc of Andreas as he navigated his own experiences with religion, mental health, loss, and self-discovery. Maybe not a perfect game for everyone, but it was perfect for me. Pentiment rules. Pentiment is really good.
This is the first time I've heard of this.
Oh, Ben's talked about it plenty.
I think it's come up before.
Damn. Yeah. I'm like Dennis on the podcast now.
No, it's an Obsidian game. It's made by the Fallout New Vegas folks. And it's like a no combat RPG where you develop and put points into stuff, but it mostly determines what storylines you can follow in this town, in this monastery and the town that surrounds it. It's really, really good, and it's on Game Pass.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. I'll have to check that out.
Ben, what's David say?
David says, Baldur's Gate 3 is a monumental achievement. Easy game of the year pick for me.
Now, Agreed. It's really good. Mm-hmm. Moxie, what's Nicholas say?
Nicholas says mine would be Cyberpunk 2077, Phantom Liberty. I already adored the base game, but the 2.0 update and the expansion really tips it over the edge of a personal goat.
We're going to have to get that on the WoW schedule at some point so I can actually play it. I can't justify putting the time into it unless it's for work.
But did you watch the anime?
No. Because I don't
worth doing.
I don't have any like affection for the world. I have affection for the concept of cyberpunk, but like I felt I would be
neither
unmoored.
Does anyone else. Neither
well. let's see here. Dennis, what does Pat say?
Pat says, for me, it's a close competition between BG3 and Alan Wake 2, but Alan Wake 2 just inches out in front.
Yeah, similar
to... Of people that have bothered to mention both, Alan Wake has won both times.
It has. Yeah, I think that must be like a more like personal appeal kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's see. Jack says, I'm picking Darkest Dungeon 2. The way the gameplay evolved from the first game, but didn't mirror it, was really great for me. And the overarching meta-narrative is one of the more ingenious story deliveries I've seen in games. I'm so sorry to subject you to this, Cole. Jack is referring, Jack sponsored an episode of Watch Out for Fireballs about Darkest Dungeon 2. We are recording that this week. I like Darkest Dungeon 2 better than Darkest Dungeon 1, mm-hmm. while still not being a fan of... playing that kind of extremely long-reaching roguelike. It feels like I am, like, I don't know, running on a treadmill that's on top of a treadmill. And I need a little bit more sense of progress than that. But I can recognize and respect what it does really well. Darkest
Don't
Dungeon
treadmill on me.
Kind of, yeah. Ben, what does Eric say?
Eric says, Pikmin 4. It was really fun to play with my wife. However... Ooh. I will say the game that deserves to be Game of the Year is, in fact, Baldur's Gate 3. I just personally had more fun with Pikmin 4.
Yeah. Which is perfectly within the remit.
I mean, sounds to me like Baldur's Gate 3 should have worked harder.
Worked harder on making your wife happy. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Moxie, what's Alex say?
Alex says, so Baldur's Gate 3 was the 2023 game I played the most last year. The game I played the most and stuck with me was Deedlit and Wonder Labyrinth. I came in expecting a fun but slight Metroidvania and ended up with an interesting meditation on grief, with Deedlit contending with the loneliness of most of the mortals in her life, having grown old and died, leaving her feeling profoundly lonely in a setting... hatch and ride white ship to the west is an option. This plus Frieren Beyond Journey's End airing, I guess, made this my year for immortal elves in mourning. It's the character from what, Record of Lodoss War, right?
Yes, so anime about, a high fantasy anime about, like, generational kingdoms and battles and stuff. More specifically anime-like than even Fire Emblem is. But this is not a strategy RPG, this is a Metroidvania.
Yeah, is Deedlit a name I should recognize?
It's a character from that series.
She's a fairly well-known anime character, but... Yes.
Got it.
It sounds like a name a DM would make up on the spot. I'm not trying to take away from
basically that anime is literally just someone's Dungeons and Dragons campaign.
Yeah, I'm not trying to take away from the gravitas that that Alex obviously felt at that. It's just it is a hard name to take seriously when you see it on the page.
Sure,
it's a headwind that it is working against. Yeah,
dude. Over the weekend. Sorry, this is a tangent. But related to the other thing they mentioned, Frieren, I think that's how it's pronounced.
Frieren?
I was kind of, you know, a little depressed, was looking for some anime to binge.
Uh-oh.
And the two I started and very quickly was like, was that and then Goblin Slayer.
I don't know about Goblin Slayer, but...
Goblin Slayer is basically a game within the first, like, it's a anime that looks like a like super lighthearted
like shonen kind of thing.
Yeah, and yeah. Within the first 10 minutes, the adventuring party loses and all of the female members get raped.
Good lord.
Yeah, it's like, no. Yeah, yeah, we're moving on.
Not going to sign up for that. Yeah, that's no good.
Yeah.
Sheesh.
So, sorry, this just reminded me of, like, yeah, this sounds like a good game I should definitely play, but I'm going to have to be very, whatever when I play it.
Judicious. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Dennis, what does Maniop say? Hey, sorry. Dennis, you might be muted. Okay.
Go. Yes, I was. Miniav says, I think it's a toss-up for me between the Dead Space remake and Burnhouse Lane. Slow year. What? But those two were the most unequivocal fun I had. And they edited in Burnhouse was 2022, apparently, so Dead Space.
Yeah.
I have not heard of Burnhouse.
Burnhouse Lane, it's the new game by the people who did The Cat Lady.
Oh, cool.
It started out as a sequel to The Cat Lady, but kind of became its own different but thematically and universally linked kind of story.
That sounds
so
cool.
If you like The Cat Lady, that will be the way to go for you. Man, it is hard to believe that the Dead Space remake was 2023.
Right.
But that is the danger of time.
So, and the Dead Space remake will be 2025 at the rate we are going.
They're compressing. They're collapsing. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So not to be confused with the Calypso Project, which was kind of like a remake of Dead Space.
Or you mean
was not a rhythm game.
You mean
Calypso Protocol? Excuse me,
Callisto Protocol, like the moon. Yeah.
So this is
okay.
Sorry, this is I'm sorry. This is the episode where I just tangent on everything.
You don't have to call it out as a tangent. Just say the thing.
Related to like indie horror games and stuff. What is the deal? Do they keep coming out with new DreadX games or something?
Yeah, that's just like a collection that they put out a few different times a year. Yeah.
Okay, because I knew it was a collection, but I thought it was a one-time release, and then I keep hearing about like more and more games, and people are like, oh yeah, this is one of the DreadX games.
Yeah, yeah. Like they're a publisher, but also like the collections are an opportunity for indie developers to like put out micro games, basically that they make that are under an umbrella. Yeah,
it's like the VHS of games.
Kinda, yeah. referring to the VHS like anthology series. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My answer for this is pretty clear. Amnesia: The Bunker. It is the game that I hope that survival horror games model after, in terms of being incredibly systems heavy while, you know, not compromising on having an affecting story, being more immersive simmy, being about kind of setting up a space and rules for the enemy and then making you navigate it. Yeah. Amnesia: The Bunker fucking rules. I adore it.
All right.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I'm going to be the populist and say Baldur's Gate 3.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah. I already explained why I can't pick Baldur's Gate 3, even though like that is a, you know, obviously, you know, there's nothing new to be said about how good it is. Moxie, how about you?
I think I'd probably go with Dredge.
Okay.
Although I think the game that I would most like to see like other games learn from, or, you know, or something like that would probably be Wolong.
Okay.
Terms of, that's the only game I've seen that was a perfect parry oriented game that I actually liked.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because it, you know, actually used consistent timing on the parries.
Okay. Yeah. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with RoboQuest, which kind of came out of early access this year or last year.
That's the mecha one?
That's, yeah, the mech roguelite with Doom or Quake movement and shooting.
Yeah, roguelike arena shooter. Yeah.
Just that is the game I derived the most joy from, and just felt the best to play.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that's hard to quantify unless you're in there jumping around and firing off headshots.
See, I'm surprised it wasn't DMZ.
Yeah,
they fumbled that bag. It was theirs to take, and they
Sorry, right. I'm just trolling.
Oh goodness. Yeah. Well, I mean, big question. I'm happy we did it in the new year as opposed to doing it in December when people might not have had a chance to, you know, play everything. I don't know. Kind of seems like that big bunch of time people have. You know,
yeah, Christmas is break as good. as a catch up period for games you want to play.
Seems really valuable.
Not to be underestimated. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, if you would like to participate in these, go to the Duckfeed community group on Facebook and watch the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Dennis, for posting this.
Mm-hmm.
The end boss.
Now it is time for a very special The End Boss, where we report in on the title of the year results, our most indulgent, self-indulgent annual tradition. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start with the alternate toadies of the year. We keep track. So everybody who listens, if you don't listen past the end theme song, that is when we submit our potential titles. I keep track of all of those. And the A toady is all of the ones that were submitted by the various hosts, but not actually chosen. Mm-hmm. So these are the runners up. This is a chance for redemption, right? And we have a whole bunch here tied for third, of this. So we can work up these. So we've got the Sip of Theseus. The fun thing about this is trying to reconstruct the context in which that was said.
Dennis made that one.
Okay.
That was definitely when he was talking about Myrtle Beach, right?
the cursed cocktail.
My guts have been completely rearranged. Are they still my stomach? this one, though, I think, was it a winner? The Shipment of Theseus?
That was a different. That might have been last year that we did the Shipment of Theseus, because that was like the space cargo game where the individual like your ship, it was almost like a dredge like system where like you got containers that kind of made up the body of your ship, but were also your health bar. Yeah, I forget what game that was.
But anyway, the Sip of Theseus cannot stand except on the shoulders of the Shipment of Theseus.
Right. We also had D&D, which was from that same episode.
They wanted the D.
Yeah, an extra D. Uh-huh. We also have, this is really long. Sometimes somebody submits a title that is way too long to actually be a title, and this is where it ends up, which is, you want this podcast, right? So here you go. Now let's see you listen to it, which is way more confrontational than our titles usually are.
It's not a title; it's a monologue.
Yeah, but that was off of that game that basically recreated all the browser games and had the dumb title.
Oh yeah, you want to play that game? So here they are. Play them. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
I'm really happy that people remember the context for these. Ben,
mind is a funny thing.
Yeah, Ben, do the next three here.
Oh no, I don't know how to pronounce this one. Oh no, my Chalamet?
Chalamet. Yeah, talking about the character from Liza P getting all messed up because he looks like Timothy Chalamet, that actor. Yeah,
that followed by Regional Sephiroth.
I like then... that one.
The tied with Rated H for Hole.
What game was that about, though?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't know.
I feel like it wasn't the hole like we're all thinking right now. It was
no, it wasn't Donut County.
That's what I thought of.
Yeah, those are all tied for third.
Yeah.
The next one is the most 2033 title ever.
It's also the most Jala title ever. Moxie, what is this?
It says, "Hi, I exist." And what the fuck?
And yeah, that has huge Jala energy.
Yep.
I think this was in reference to talking about like doing yoga or workouts that you aren't typical for you, and it gets to all the muscles that don't you're not usually aware of.
Yeah, you know, blind spots. Moxie, what is the winner of the ATOTI?
Don't be sad that it's over. Be sad that it happened.
Classic saying.
Yeah. That, also yeah, very that, 2023.
That is very much like if I was going to get one of these framed, that would look good on a wall.
Yeah. And these, so the actual titles of the year, we're gonna do 10 and we're going to be a little bit quicker about it. But there are no straight up ties on this. It is just a straight up 10. Mm-hmm. Prizing the one that got more higher ranked votes. We did like a ranked choice voting for these. So at number 10 we got "These Pants Are Holding Me Back." I have no context for this.
Is that Dennis?
I don't remember why I said it. Yeah. It's why I was unable to keep up with something. It was an excuse for doing poorly at a video game.
Ben, what's number 9?
Congratulations, honey. It's a demon.
Yeah, I vaguely remember what that one was, but I've got nothing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Moxie, number 8.
Number 8 is Gurgi and the Grink.
Yes. Referring, somebody was talking about Kirby, but mispronounced it.
Yes.
Dennis, what's number 7?
Steam Beck.
Steam Beck, I think, led to the best bit. Which was all of us trying to make different, I mean, me and Ben, let's say. Me and Ben.
No. I was out of it. I was lagging behind. Everyone else was making jokes about it, though.
But it was puns on Beck song titles.
Yeah.
But and we were specific. We were specifically torturing Jala with that, I think. Number 6 was Lemon Souls.
Self-explanatory, really.
That's like when you get a new soul, but it keeps breaking down. You know, you return it under lemon laws. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I forget. I think I was just making fun of the weird pronunciation or the weird punctuation on Demon Souls, right?
This was changing a letter. One of the multiplayer questions.
Yes.
There we go. Yeah, Ben. What's number 5?
Number 5 is Garsh, Leon, I betrayed you.
Why is Goofy talking to Leon Kennedy? Leon S. Kennedy?
Oh, man.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's when Disney inevitably buys
Capcom. Oh, yeah.
Capcom.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. Moxie, what's number 4?
Number 4 is Snarfling Some Wet Plops.
That very specifically was me talking about the sound design in Amnesia the Dark or Amnesia the Bunker.
Yes, yeah. And I wish you hadn't.
Dennis, what's number 3?
Number 3 is Bounce House of Leaves.
I want someone to make that that game.
That was
Talk about going to the world's largest bounce house?
That's specifically what it was, the world's largest traveling bounce house, which obviously that was me bringing up the House of Leaves thing, but you talking about how it felt like it went on forever.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah. Number 2 was your various anime straps. That was a comment that somebody made to you, Moxie, about your cosplay, right?
Yeah, I was at a Pride Festival and had this over-elaborate bag, like hip bag. It fell off, and the girl next to me just in the least impressed voice ever, she, oh, your various anime straps.
God. Which is both amazing. Honoring the choice, but also incredibly dismissive.
Yep.
That's really good. And Ben, hilarious. you get to read number 1, the title of the year for 2023.
The honor. The number 1 title was, oh no, my hemoglobin.
What was that about? That was a very recent one too, but I have no recollection.
I don't remember the context.
Yeah.
I have to say, I first read this as my hemogoblin.
I always read hemogoblin as hemogoblin.
Hemogoblin's the major way that people lose their hemoglobin, in fact.
Yes. Yeah.
But I love this as a piece with Oh No, My Chalamet.
Yeah, so it's funny because you can recognize you can kind of tell who these come from. This is a common Cole joke format. The oh no, my blank. Yeah. just the exclamation, the unlikely exclamation that comes from it.
Somebody getting exsanguinated.
Yes. Yeah. And yeah, title of the year. So A Toady was Don't Be Sad It's Over, Be Sad That It Happened.
And I'm sorry, you're going to have to wrap up your acceptance speech, Cole. We're out of time. Let's show some commercials. Let's go right here.
Okay. Any Black Horse titles that you guys wish would have made it to the ranks, but just didn't get there?
I forget what I voted for. Let me look down here.
Personal favorite is Kirgy and the Grink. It's just a fun phrase.
Yeah. I really liked Crimson Headed Stepchild. That was a Ben original, talking about something or other related to the original Resident Evil remake.
I'll toss it back to you and say I think I like Carrot Bottom a whole lot. So
yeah. I was looking at that one as well. It's one of those, why have I never thought that before?
See, I don't know if this would be my thing. I remember the bit behind Two Soul Maximum being hilarious, but I don't recall why it was.
right. Yeah.
A real murderable name is, I like that.
Yeah.
E3 broke containment. I don't think I was here for that one, but that's great.
That was just us talking about like the fact that there's no E3. It's just a whole month of it, I think. Yeah.
And now there's literally no E3.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is self-indulgent, but like it's us looking back at the year almost. You know, each of these can be... Yeah, each of these can be tied to like a particular thing that stuck out in a in an episode. So it's not entirely meaningless.
It's a bit of a highlight reel as well.
Yes,
we're not wrong. You're wrong.
I'm just trying to justify it.
It's Let us our, have this.
It's our show, so we can make a choice. But like, I enjoy it. I like the process of, you know, listening for titles and maybe sometimes stealthily saying something that you want to be a title.
Is hammock legs? Is that like the new SCP?
No, that was me talking about getting a hammock for my redone patio.
Adjusting to it.
Had nothing to do with video games.
We need someone listening to bite the bullet and write in saying they enjoyed this so we can continue doing it with clear consciences. So that is your assignment this week.
People not enjoying this has never stopped us from doing it before.
True.
Yeah. But I would feel less.
How often do we talk about Cincinnati specific food?
I'm literally looking at a picture of Grippo's potato chips.
Well, because I put in a link so people could buy them if they wanted to.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So good. So that's fun. We'll be back to a regular end boss next week. But this was we had to tally him up sometime. Thank you, Dennis, for doing the Excel legwork.
My pleasure.
On doing that, yeah. All right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, looking at that Grippo's link, because of the way links are done, they can't have the period for a 1.5-pound box. So it just shows up as a Grippo's 15-pound box, and I'm trying to want it now.
Why not? How do you all feel about bunning it up?
Let us button.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 484, the last episode that will be a palindrome for 1,000 episodes. We really appreciate you taking the time. Sorry, I say that stuff just to piss off Ben.
I frowned so hard at that.
It's just because, like, I know you're doing a bit, but I can't not then look at it and start doing the math in my head.
But no, we really appreciate you taking the time. If you want to help us, you've listened to podcasts before, you know what you can do. Leave a rating or review, tell a friend, support Duckfeed on Patreon. Check out the new show. Real Lich Hours. There we go. The Baldur's Gate 3 show. There was a lot of Baldur's Gate 3 talk. The first four episodes are available for free for everybody, kind of going up to when you get to the gates of the Druid Enclave. It's a good show. I like doing it. Baldur's Gate 3 bears a close inspection, and the format's a little bit different too.
Yeah, I know you can give bears a close inspection.
Druids.
You can. Druids. Yeah. I can't do anymore. I think Dennis, you took it. I shouldn't have gone beyond that.
Shouldn't have opened that door.
Probably not.
Shouldn't have shook that bear.
Dennis, you got anything you want to anything going on?
Oh, let's see. I mean, I'm going to be at Origin, so I figure we're 4 months out now. That's plenty of time to promote.
That's in Columbus, Ohio.
That is in Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Deck of Wonders. And, well, we'll see. I've got some stuff in the works that might be there, might not. So we'll see. But always exciting times. If you're in the area or feel like making a trip to like the second biggest con here, that would be great to see you there.
Awesome. Cool. Well, unless I'm forgetting anything, we can just wrap it up. I have been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I've been Moxie. I still can't get into Blue Sky.
Oh, I can send you I'll send you a code.
Oh, I can.
Will I?
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles.
I'm definitely not sending Ben a code.
I don't like social media.
Yeah, that's wise. That's wise. Okay.
So I have one title. Furry Elephant Vor.
Oh no. Starting 2024 off with a bang.
2023 was so horny. We need to see if we can beat it.
Yeah, beat it.
Yeah, lol.
Rhinoceros, whatever.
I have Don't Treadmill on Me. and I also have sorry, I'm looking away because I've got too many screens here. The Danger of Time.
Ooh.
Talking about Dead Space remake being feeling like it's so far away.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here, Ben, what you got?
I got one, and it's kind of stylized weird, but it's, so you're a colonialist? Question mark. So you're a colonialist! Exclamation point.
that's a lot to type.
Yeah.
Colonialist. Okay. And Dennis, how about you?
I have Kids Are a Pyramid Scheme.
Okay.
I have Don't Treadmill on Me.
Okay.
Much appreciate that one. And then personal favorite, I have The Calypso Protocol.
Oh no.
All right.
What was the context for Don't Treadmill on Me?
Oh, it was me talking about Darkest Dungeon 2. Yeah, I feel not feeling like you're making progression in a roguelike. Yeah. Don't Treadmill on Me has it by votes.
I like it.
Yeah. Cool. Well, let's take it.
Bam.
All right. It is decided.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year.